My dog's looking at me funny now.
This is Mike from Cali for Michelle from Tennessee.
Yep.
So, Michelle, this is Callie for 209 on Halt and Catch Fire on West Coast Project. How are you doing, Michelle?
Great. How are you?
Doing any gun practice lately?
No, I haven't.
We have blasted through several episodes of multiple podcasts, and this is our last one for the day, so I'm glad that we made it. We have $6,000 left. We've got to take some target practice and get on with it. That's where actually Donna and Cameron are on Halt and Catch Fire, episode 209, Cali. They're doing.
Okay, that was stupid. Was that stupid? Is that what you do?
Doing.
I didn't like that.
That introduction I just did, or gun practice?
No, your introduction was spot on. I'm talking about the gun practice. So is that really what you're gonna do?
Yeah, I don't know. Blow off some steam. Why not? What's wrong with that over anything else?
I don't know. I mean, I just think they got so much on their plate and so much that they need to be focused on, and you know, I guess in true Cameron form, she's at the, you know, at the firing range. I don't know. I just thought, why would you do that?
So do you think I could believe Cameron has a gun? Do you believe Donna has a gun in Texas of 1986, 85, 86?
Sure. Yeah.
They start out the scene with Cameron shooting and they end up the scene with Donna shooting. So
yep.
She looked like she had her skills together.
And Donna also points out that it's too bad they can't sue WestNet. So she's kind of bringing up the legal aspect of what they've done stealing their content.
Yeah, you can't sue people. I mean, they'd essentially lost $5 million. You can't sue people that easily and quickly. Like, oh, I'll just sue you for that and catch up with you and catch you. It's not that easy. You can maybe small claims court sue somebody for a few thousand dollars if your car gets bumped and they don't pay, or you know, and then you got to collect those judgments, but it's not as easy as like, I'll just sue and everything will be on the up and up again.
No, I was thinking that Donna was thinking that suing them would maybe make them stop, you know, like a cease and desist more than getting.
Well, that's my point. It's not that simple.
Sure.
And then the guy, Jesse, kind of calls Donna on that at this shareholders meeting.
Well, also the fact that she's going up against an oil company and they are mutiny with $5,000 to their name and a house. Can't even make payroll.
Yeah, they do a little accounting here of what they have left while they're doing the gun practice. They have $6,000 left and all they have is computers and games. And what they need to do, and I like this about Cameron. Now, again, my liking of Cameron comes back here. She's like, well, we got to find some cartridge publication companies and we got to make something of it. If that's all we have, we got to make hay with what we have, which is admirable of her to fight her way, try to think of a way to fight her way through this.
I agree.
All right. Now, Joe and Sarah wake up to a phone call from Gordon. He needs to get bailed out of jail because I guess Stan's Garage episode landed him in jail.
Yeah.
And Gordon tells Joe on the way home from jail just to leave all this behind and put it behind him, which isn't bad advice. What did you think of that?
I don't know. No, I thought it was – I don't think that's good advice. To what end? You know, you leave everything behind and unfinished, so you've kind of got that muck in the background and stuff. I don't know.
But why do you think Gordon wants him to do that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
I think Gordon sees himself on a sinking ship, and he sees this old friend / business associate / enemy even. He's just saying, dude, just get yourself out. You know, I think he kind of feels for Joe here, like – maybe even surreptitiously, what's the word when you live something vicariously, not surreptitiously, vicariously, just let me see somebody get out of this with themselves whole, and maybe that's you.
But anybody taking any advice from Gordon at this point, as we soon see, would be
maybe
not very good.
The tricky part about Gordon is sometimes he's right on, super smart, and sometimes he's insane.
Yeah, but those people are the most dangerous.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean he doesn't have good ideas sometimes.
No, but you don't know which ones are, I mean, you know, unless you know, you don't know which ones are the good ones and which ones are not the good ones. So how can you take any advice from, I don't know.
That's why they invented coins, Michelle.
Oh, okay.
So Tom now argues with Cameron about selling off Extract and Defend, and they are totally broken now. Cameron's like, is that it? Is that all? We're done talking? She's like just being totally shut out, shutting him out and dismissive of him.
Yeah.
And that's the break. That's the first commercial break. Now Gordon gets in this garage. He goes into this parking garage. He's looking for that JGL company that placed the ad.
Right. And in place of going home after Joe lets him off, he finds that advertisement in his pocket still. And I don't think we brought that up last time, that he went to the party, remember, to talk to Donna in the episode before about how he felt like they had ripped him off.
Right.
And do you remember how she was with that?
Yeah, she's like, just relax, have a beer. We're celebrating today. We'll fight this tomorrow.
I know she was finally happy, and here he comes in with, you know, just like this thing.
Well, she does think he's insane. She does think he's, like, not mentally capable of reason.
I think it was partly that, but I think it was also the fact that she wanted a moment. You know, Cameron had just or was just tuning in to the community part, and I think she just wanted a moment.
Yeah, but if your husband had a real concern about a company that he was running and it was valid, you would not stay at a party because you needed a moment. You would race home and call a lawyer, call a...
Oh, sure. She I don't think she takes him seriously.
Right.
She said it'll be the same tomorrow.
She deserves a moment because he's freaking insane. He's like losing his mental capacity. And she's like, look, just give me a break. We'll do this tomorrow. Right. But that's because she thinks he's goofed, not because, you know, of anything else. So he goes to find this computer company and he gets into this garage, which he never gets out of, really. He gets out of it. His car never gets out of it. But the computer company is already out of business, Michelle.
Yep.
That didn't last very long.
Right, which kind of, again, goes to show how long it would take to put in an advertisement back then and all that kind of thing. So
I would say 1 month. The answer to that is 1 month. Magazines published monthly, probably maybe 2 months. You got to put an ad in, you know, the month before it gets published, so they know where to put it. And
that's what I'm saying. I mean, it was nothing that quick, and his response to it was like it was something against him, which it couldn't have been based on that time frame.
It was totally probably against him. Somebody saw his company, copied his idea. That really happened.
Do you think that
happened? It wasn't a fake ad.
No, it wasn't a fake ad, but anybody could have put together a make-your-own computer or pick out your own. I mean, this company went down. Why would this company have went down and his company succeeded?
Maybe they saw his idea, they copied it, they didn't deliver on it, they ran out of money.
And
they
couldn't.
This was a copy of his idea. This was a real thing. It wasn't his imagining, like, oh, wow, look, another company that just happens to be the same price. Somebody came up with the same idea. They go to shows, they see, you know, they see stuff. It's a good idea, and somebody copied it. He just thought his friends were right. Subversively, and his wife were doing it.
Particularly Donna. He's got a hate against her at this point.
So, real company, wrong enemy, though. He picked the wrong people to blame. He just messed that part up. So now we go to the Westnet press conference, and Jesse meets with Donna about the copyrights, and they try to play a little lawyer here with each other. And she's going to tell the trade magazines if he doesn't play ball with her, and he's already one-upped her by telling everybody to come and see their great idea at the shareholders meeting.
Right.
And she threatens court, and he reveals that doesn't scare me, and why would you? And she kind of blames Joe, and he says, well, why would you think Joe had anything to do with this? And kind of reveals the light to her that Joe had nothing to do with this.
Right.
So I will remind you, Michelle, of my thought that the old alliances getting reforged, this is a sign of that Donna doesn't now have to fear Joe. She can somehow have an avenue open to him to forge an old partnership.
Sure, yeah.
He could be a good ally to her.
Right.
So I think that was the important part of this. Somehow I lost a bunch of notes, but I have here, you might have to help me, but Sarah and Joe talk about the book, her book. And this reminded me that they are broken too, because Wheeler shows up and gives her something in an apologetic way, like jewelry, a bracelet or a necklace or something.
Yeah, it looked like some kind of it was a gift of some kind. But, you know, then I felt like the reason that he came over, or the reason Joe came over was to, or the reason Jacob came over was to have a conversation with Joe. And that was kind of like his reason to come there.
Well, of course, yeah.
And then he takes Joe outside and you know, Joe confronts him stealing the intellectual property that he stole. And, you know, Jacob tells him they tried to buy it. Too bad. And that he's fixing to go public and he wants Joe to be there.
Yeah, you can't. First of all, Sarah is never important in the show, so nobody's ever going to talk to Sarah. Nobody cares what Sarah thinks. Right. She's never really the real reason she's in the scene. It's always the other people in the scene. So, yeah, he comes, and then Joe, he accuses Joe of killing the deal with Mutiny. So, hey, I tried to buy them, and they said, no, you killed the deal, so I guess I'll
he admits it.
But still, you can't, yeah. If you try to buy something and the person doesn't sell it to you, that doesn't mean you can just steal it from them.
Well, no, I tried to buy it. That's what Jacob, I mean, that was Jacob's thing, and that's what he was going to do.
But that's silly logic. It's non-logic.
Hey, I'm going to have to let my dog out. I'm sorry. She's like scratching on the door, so give me a second, okay?
All right.
Okay, hang on. Sorry, I told you she's looking at me funny. She's like, what the heck are you doing? Okay.
Yeah, so, like I said, somehow I lost my notes. I don't know what happened to them. But they, let me see if I can pull them back here.
Well, but Joe starts threatening.
Yeah, one thing else about this scene is that, one other thing about this scene is that Jacob tries to lure Joe into a Western West Group, like, go work in the West office of West Group in California.
Yeah, he's almost promising him, you know, we'll open up something there for you, kind of.
So in addition to, like, accusing Joe of killing the deal and Joe threatening to go public and taking down West Group, Jacob kind of says, well, go open a West Coast West Group office. So he's trying all different ways to get Joe back in, which is really kind of counter to his last interaction where he's very dismissive of him, like, I don't need you anymore, thanks for everything, see you, have a nice life. And his invitation to the shareholder meeting seems really kind of fraught with danger, right? Letting a guy get up and do a keynote speech at your shareholders meeting who you're not sure what he's going to say. He lets Joe do that, or he gives Joe that opportunity.
Yeah, I didn't really understand why he would do that, and particularly because he didn't even know if Joe's going to go, and, you know, he wants him to, he says, and then Joe threatens him with coldly, like, withholding his family. He's like, you know, we'll have kids someday who'll go, who's that gray-haired man? And I'll go, oh, that's your grandpa, you know, and he goes into this whole big, long thing about, we're never going to have anything to do with you, and then Jacob Steele allows him to be a keynote speaker there. That was odd.
Yeah, threatening him not to see the grandkids was pretty bad.
It was brutal.
So, Michelle, this is where my notes went south, so you might have to pick up the ball here and carry it.
Okay.
So what happened next?
Well, then Cameron is talking to someone trying to sell her game, and on the phone, and Boz comes in, and, you know, Boz is talking to her and gets her to smile and all that kind of stuff. And then Cameron shows him their next community interface. She's, you know, she's been working on that. And I did make a note here that I think that Boz has a secret and he's not spilling it yet to Cameron, because he seems kind of, I don't know, like he's got something that he wanted to talk about, but he ends up not doing it.
Well, he also acts as the Sarah to Joe, and in that he tells Cameron, "You're the queen bitch. You're the queen of the Nile. You're the queen coder." Right? He pumps her up like, "You're the best. You're the leader of all this." He pulls a Sarah to Joe like she does to Joe, which was really good. But he did it in a good way. She smiles and she feels pumped up from it.
Yeah, he's always been able to do that with her. He's always been the voice of reason and the voice of, you know, enthusiasm and like you said, pumping her up and stuff.
So what do you think the secret was that he had in keeping a secret from us?
No, I think he's going for the job interview. And I think he was maybe considering telling her or whatever. And then he decides not to. I don't know.
Don't they go right from here, though? Don't they go right from here to the fun time meeting? Isn't that why he was dressed up?
Well, yeah. Yeah, they do.
That's a really great take, though, that he was on his way to a job interview from his son's lead. That could very possibly be. Because it looked like he had the same suit. He probably has one suit.
Well, maybe, yeah. I just felt like he had something else. The whole interaction felt like he was kind of keeping something from her to me, but that could have just been my take on it. I mean, I just made a note about it before I actually knew that he was actually keeping something from her that we find out later on. And I made the note as I went along because I only watched this once. But then we see Gordon, and he has stumbled down into like the lower level of the parking garage when he's come out of this place where the computer company has disassembled and went away. He can't find his car. And we've kind of flipped back and forth a couple times already where he's searching for his car and he can't find it. And so he ends up down in like the basement area of this garage, and there's an employee down there. And he just tells the guy he can't find his car. He's clearly confused.
Yeah, this whole garage scene was dumb. It was way too long. And then when he finds out that he wants to get out, he just butt lifts himself up step by step and gets out. He didn't have to sit there for hours. He could have just done that.
Yeah, I kind of said the same thing aloud at that point in it, too. I agree. But his being lost in there was a incredible scene, I thought. You know, somebody who's having some kind of mental disorder and he can't find his car. I mean, we've all lost our car places before, right? And you feel so stupid doing that. And this is not just a, you know, I can't remember what floor I parked on. This is like a big, big deal. And it's,
well, then when he sees his car as he's being ambulanced out or stretchered out, he's like, "There it is. There's my car." Like everything's solved. Like he forgot that he broke his ankle or whatever.
Yeah.
He's got memory and psychological problems and all that. So.
Yeah. Then we see Donna, Cameron, and Boz, and they're pitching to Fun Time, and,
yeah, they're getting the short, small office meeting.
Yeah, they're in a meeting with the guy that is being called out of his meeting to go get coffee for the real guys. That's how low down they are.
Yeah, the copy boy and the secretary are holding the meeting.
But this is where Donna tells Cameron that Joe didn't know about WestNet, and that's like a real, I think, boost to Cameron. So then that scene ends, and we see Joe and Sarah, and they're discussing going to the shareholders meeting. And Sarah kind of talks him into going, and she tells him to go and show everyone what he started, and then they can leave and just make this clean break. And, you know, I think we know that Joe has some, he's torn.
Agenda, yeah.
About that. The next scene is Donna and Cameron, and they're pitching the game to the guy, and they talk about the difference in the game and everything.
It's not a dual person game, it's a dual perspective game. Like you could be the spy or you could be the defender or whatever they call it.
Right. You could be the Russian or the American or whatever it was. And yeah. Yeah, you got to pick. Did you want to be the good guy or the bad guy?
Right.
Did you want to be the rescuer or the bad guy? Which was kind of cool. And Donna was pointing out, Donna was really defending Cameron's game, Cameron and Tom's game in this, which was really cool to me because we just saw Cameron really defending Donna's community. And now we're seeing Donna really come back and she's standing up and she's talking about how the claustrophobia and stuff of the game adds to it to her, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, they all have a nice mix of Donna has enough technical mix. Like, I've played this game and it is, feels claustrophobic and it really does add to the effect of how you enjoy. Like, she's not just some super savvy business person. She knows the product.
Sure. But then Donna suggests that they leave, but Boz hears the girl speaking Japanese on the phone. It was Japanese, right? That's what
she's speaking. Yeah, because they talk about Toyota and stuff.
Right. And so Boz says, hang on just a minute. He goes in with the big guys in the other room, and he starts to negotiate real stuff. And he's, you know, hear us out. You're not going to regret it. Boz is a salesman. He's a salesman. You know, they're not going to turn that down. So that was pretty cool. What do you think about that?
Boz is super smart because he's like, he does two things with this tactic of walking into the main room and getting the real guys in front of him. He accepts their apology. He apologizes for them and then accepts it by saying, that was a really smart move putting us in the kiddie room to drive down the price, but don't worry, I'm not going to be offended by it. I just appreciate you talking to me now. Like, he dismisses the whole fact that they shunted him off to the underlings.
Right.
And then he says, and then he drops strategy on them. Like, he's looking at their map and he's like, so here's what you do. You do what Toyota did. You put a manufacturing base like they did in Fremont, California. So you're not the enemy invading from the outside. And again, I forget, Michelle, where we talked about invaders coming from the outside. But this was also really brilliant by Boz because Toyota made themselves loved by America because they gave Americans jobs. You buy a Toyota, you're giving guys in Fremont, California at the manufacturing plant jobs. You guys should do that with your Japanese company. Give them a home base here in the USA. Good old made in the USA. So with his Texas accent. He is a totally great salesman. So he apologizes for them, accepts the apology on his behalf, grants himself this meeting, pulls the chair out, sits down, pitches this great idea all in one fell swoop. It was just brilliant.
It was brilliant. He did such a... I mean, Boz, he showed his worth again and again, but that was the best, I thought.
Yeah, I liked that a lot.
I did too. So then in the next scene, we see Donna, Cameron, and Boz. They come back in to mutiny solemnly, and everyone's real solemn sitting in there. And then Donna lets it out that they sold it. And then all the goof troop, they lift Donna in the air as Cameron walks away.
Yeah, and Queen Donna.
Yeah.
Well, she was the one holding the check for $50,000.
That's a big deal. So, I don't know, though. Then we see Gordon and he's urinating in the garage. And then he falls down the stairs and he can't get up. And so he's just like, you know, we're to assume that he's broken his leg and he's laying down in between, on like the landing between the two flights of stairs that make up a floor, and he can't get either way. He's yelling hello. And
I know, but this is all dumb. We don't even need to.
I know. But that's kind of where they leave us there.
As far as I'm concerned, Gordon's out of the garage. He sees the car on the way out. He's like, there it is. There's the answer. There's the most important thing in life. I found my car. Right? He reduced everything to like his instant moment. His memory is like 8 seconds long now.
Right. Like the problem wasn't that he couldn't find his car. It's just that he's now found his car.
Right. Forget so, that I'm on a stretcher with an IV being with a broken leg. And there's my car.
Right. And forget the fact that I've walked around for 7 hours in this one little garage trying to find the car. Forget the fact that, you know, that my mind is not working right. But there's my car. Yeah, I agree with that.
Right. And this wandering in this garage took up a good 10 minutes of this. Maybe not that long. It seemed like that. But it's several minutes of this episode, which it didn't really need to.
Well, it didn't, but as we get to the end, I do want to point something out that was brought up that kind of took me by surprise with it, which made it more acceptable to me. But I don't want to get into it yet because it gets into the end part. But okay, the next part, Tom comes in and he congratulates Cameron. And she says she feels lighter and clearer than she has in a while. And, you know, she says, I don't know, she does this whole, she makes excuses. She said she got too happy and it's cost her the company.
Yeah, and Tom had made her happy and now she can't have that anymore. That it's kind of a chicken shit way of ending it with
breaking
Tom.
Up with him. I agree. And he says Joe is making it happen and he feels used. And he tells her that she's a lot more like Joe than she thinks. And then Cameron,
she is. He's right. That's why she's and Joe are an attraction to each other.
He is right. And then she just, you know, shuts him out. She asks him to leave.
Also liked in Cameron's office how she had the whiteboard with the Sharpie written on it. Like, oops, I used a Sharpie, not a dry erase marker. And it was like attempted to have been erased and it's all black and gray and can never really get that off. That's perfect for Cameron.
That is perfect for her. You're right. I didn't notice that, but you're right. That's Cameron. Okay, so then we have a commercial, and then we go back. We're at the shareholders meeting, and Joe is typing something, and
he throws Jesse off the stage. Get the hell away from me before I have you thrown off the stage. He knows he's got the spotlight now, at least for the next half hour.
Yeah, but I don't think he knows what he's going to do yet.
I was going to ask you. God, I lost my goddamn notes. I can't figure out why. Yeah, you think he forms this on the run as he's going through this?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure because, but I don't think he knew there. I think there he was still trying to flesh it out and stuff because even when he starts his speech, I think he's going to go through with it, or I think he thinks he's going to kind of go through with it.
Go through with what, though? What's his plan A?
Well, I think plan A was to do what Sarah told him to do. Just go in there and say, you know, this was my idea, you know, my kind of company, which is why I brought up kind of it was his company with Cameron, I thought. But you know, say, this is what I started, and now this is what it's flourished into, and congratulations to all you shareholders, you're going to be rich, essentially. And then I think he just couldn't go through with that. But anyway, a reporter wants a word with him, and it's an old friend. It turns out to be Cameron, who's standing back there. Great disguise, right? She's got like a hoodie on her hair. I mean, that was crazy.
She'd never wear a hoodie in real life.
No, but would she not?
No, I'm kidding. That's exactly what she would look like.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, yeah, the hoodie was absolutely no disguise. But Joe takes her aside, and she tells him that when her life goes up in a mushroom cloud, she naturally assumes he's the one behind it, but she realizes now he wasn't.
And they laugh. They kind of laugh that off, and we think, well, okay, they're being romantically sarcastic.
Right. Well, right, and they kind of were, right? Because
well, I think so, but go ahead, because there's a boom here that happens.
She reminds Joe that California was her idea, and so she's hurt that he's moving to California, I think, with Sarah. Cameron tells him that someone close to her, which of course we know is Tom, told her that there must still be a reason why he's still in her life. And I thought it was pretty interesting that has Joe wondered what would happen if they stopped chasing obsessively and just held on to each other. And she tells him she doesn't want him to go away at all. And then she leans in and kisses him, and he starts kissing her back, and then he, you know, pushes her away and says he can't do it.
So do you think that was real? Those kisses were real from both of them?
Yeah. I mean, why would they not have been real? What were you thinking?
Well, they could, based on what happens, have been a pretty good act by Cameron.
Oh, yeah. I don't think so. I think she loves him. I think we've known she's loved him. She loved him for a long time. And here, you were talking about Sarah lifting him up, I think, in the past episode. Here, she says to him, she says, you're Joe McMillan. You can do whatever you want.
Right. Sarah lifting him up is artificial, Right. Cameron lifting him up is real.
She means that. I mean, I believe that. That was really a strong thing to me. And, you know, he pushes her away and she apologizes, but she leaves him with a floppy. And, you know, she says it's what could have been, and she walks away. And then Joe sticks it in the computer and he looks at it, and it's their community, but it's got "For Joe Always" C inscripted on it. Do you think he knew then what was on that?
No, I think it was just, he thought this is just an affectionate way for her to take a version of the, it's like a peace offering. Like, okay, I see what happened here, but here I'm personalizing this copy for you.
Yeah, I don't know, because I didn't get that either, but I watched this with Mike, my husband, and he saw it immediately. He really thought that Joe knew what Cameron did. You know better than to stick, you know, a floppy into something, or at that point, a floppy, you know, any kind of media into something, particularly after all the stuff that's happened and viruses and all that kind of stuff. So, he immediately thought that's what that was, and I didn't get that. So,
I didn't even think that until you just said that. I never considered that. I thought it was Joe just thinking, oh, she gave me a signed version of her original copy. That's cute. Or she did it maliciously to hurt Joe. Like, I'm putting Sonaris into this disc and you can run it. I'll make you think it's a friendly, lovey-dovey thing, and somehow it blows it up. I didn't ever think that let's work together in collusion to make this, to blow up WestNet.
Yeah.
But that's probably the most likely scenario, now that you say it.
I didn't get that right then either, but later on I wasn't sure if that's what they were trying to tell us or not. But anyway, that was a pretty interesting scene. I thought that was one of the best scenes in this episode. Then we go into the next scene, and Jacob introduces Joe at his annual shareholders meeting, and the way Joe goes into it, and he starts talking about community and the internet and stuff like that. He calls it the printing press, the newspaper, the telephone of tomorrow, a pathway to a new world, and he's going into all this, and he tries to do this, then he hesitates, and then he tries again, and then he says, all this, and then there's a long pause, and he goes, all this, and then he says, began with a girl named Cameron. She saw the future. She got here first. And then he goes into the, it's innovation, and we can't act like it's ours when it's hers. And
yeah, Sarah, he definitely shifts gears mid presentation there.
Right. Right. So he couldn't really have known what he was doing and then shifted gears like that, maybe. I don't know.
I don't think he pre-planned that. I think it dawned on him that this is not what I want to do, and what I really want to do is give credit.
Yeah, because he didn't believe in doing that. He didn't believe in stealing her, you know, company.
We saw an earlier version of this in season one, where Gordon used Donna's idea to put things on both sides of a circuit board and stack them.
Yeah.
And he claimed it for his idea, and then later on he gave her credit at the CES or at one of the shows, which was kind of reminiscent during this scene with Joe giving Cameron credit for this whole idea of mutiny.
Right, for her own stuff. But we see Sarah sitting there, and she acts like she doesn't know what to do at this instance. She's just sitting there. They pan to her, and that was kind of interesting that they did pan to her at that point. The next scene, we're back with Gordon. You don't want to talk about anymore. He's crying though, and I did want to point that out. When they get him in the ambulance, they've got him on.
He's peeing. He's crying. He's in the garage. All right, we get it.
Okay. Then we go back to the shareholders meeting, and Jesse's speaking. He's trying to undo what Joe's done and said about Cameron. And then WestNet starts to shut down.
Sonaris comes back. Yeah.
And there is a virus on that floppy that was put in. That was just, I mean, was that the best?
So Gordon does have power. That's Gordon Sonaris. That's what Gordon accidentally erased the first mutiny.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, that was the mistakenly programmed Sonaris. So Gordon does have power, even though he's this powerless, sniveling little weasel on a stretcher. It's
goodness
his...
gracious, Mike.
Huh?
That's bad. I mean, the guy's sick. I mean, it's not like he's just, you know.
Well, he didn't do it on purpose for this. He didn't do it on purpose the first time. He just created this code that's a malicious code by accident that Cameron used to take down Wheeler's company.
Yep.
In front of the shareholders.
In front of them. It's like blipping out and it's putting up all this stuff. It's perfect. Oh my gosh. Were you not so happy when that happened?
Now, they could have probably turned off the big screen. Like, hey, somebody turn off the projector.
Yeah, but it wasn't just the projector. No, no, no. They all had...
I know, but you still could turn off the big projector. Not every single person had a screen in front of them.
No, but a lot of them did. There was computers all over the place. They would have probably done that, but I don't think they even knew what was going on.
Or pull the power, you know, shut down the power in the building.
So then we go to a commercial that shut down the power. Then we come back and Cameron's in her bed on her her version of a laptop, which is like a desktop that she's got in bed with her. And this is where Boz comes in and he says it might be time for him to move on. Cameron says he can't quit. Boz says he has to have something stable for his family. And Cameron offers him a raise and he says he's too old to be eating three meals a day from a toaster.
Yeah, what do you think of Boz moving on and the two guys with Gordon moving on? I mean, those seemed like pretty good opportunities to move away from that. Even if you are 50, 55, 58, whatever, you know, they're making as much money as they made. He matched their paychecks. Boz, what's Boz going to do to make another paycheck? It's not that bad of a situation to work for a startup company like that that's been just offered $5 million as a buyout.
No, I think it's obvious that Stan told them something, and the guys in Gordon's garage and
yeah,
spooked
that's true.
Them or led them away. Boz,
still, even if that's the case, still you would try to fix it. Like I'd have a private meeting with Donna. Like, hey, Donna, the guy's got medical issues. He's got a real viable, great idea and a good company here. Let's fix it. Why should you lose out as a family company just because your husband's got problems? You don't go to one lunch and then run away and shift your whole career away from.
No, not in literally, you know, an hour. I mean, that was insane. I agree. I don't know why Boz is leaving. Boz, I don't know. He seems to have this real connection with Cameron. Maybe it's because his son influenced him. His son sees his work environment, and maybe that influenced him.
Or he could be closer to his son again. Yeah, something about his son would make that more understandable, that he would change on the dime like that.
Yeah, because I didn't really get it either.
Ask Mike. Mike's like, are you going to do this next week's podcast with me or with Mike, Michelle? Because he's got it.
No, definitely with you. But he does come up with some ideas sometimes.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That whole idea about the mutual plan to take down Wheeler. I like that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of devious. I'm like looking at him like, what? But okay. So then in the next scene, we see that Donna's talking to Gordon, who's in a hospital bed now, and he's trying to explain what happened and kind of downplaying it and everything. The doctor comes in and wants to talk to Donna. Now, this is where we get into what I wanted to talk to you about. He says this episode is psychological, and it has nothing to do with his brain lesions, nothing's progressed or anything like that, and he wants to know if Gordon's ever experienced any manic behavior in the past. What do you think about that? Because we've seen Gordon dig in the hole in the backyard. Remember, that was prior to, and we kind of attributed it to his brain thing as an afterthought. I think.
Yeah, it's okay. What do you think?
I think Gordon has a serious mental illness, and I think it is completely separate from whatever his brain lesion is, and I think that mental illness is progressing. I think we saw that with his paranoia over the other company advertisement thing and his fixation on that. And I think we saw that. I mean, I saw it with his digging the hole in the yard. That freaked me out.
Yeah, he did that in season one. Yeah, it's complicated that they mix up the brain. Like, it's not like he has an aneurysm and it's a blood vessel and it's got nothing to do with the brain. It's like a brain degradation thing from the lead and the solder, plus it's an insanity related thing. Those are two blurry things that they put into this that make it hard to, because they do say like the medical condition kind of prompted this other psychological condition to flare up. But they're so related to each other that how do you know it's not the lead and the solder making him forgetful? Or
you see, I don't think it's that at all. I personally think that was just something that they found. I mean, you know, you find stuff all the time doing MRIs and stuff like that that people never even know that they had, just like some kind of cysts and whatever that are not related to your medical problem, but they can be attributed to a medical problem. I think Gordon has a mental issue that they tried to find a physical reason for, and they found something that they could attribute it to. But I think Gordon is going down a dark, dark path of mental instability. And I don't think the lesions haven't changed. So I don't think that's going to be a factor. I think it's going to be maybe a schizophrenia or a bipolar or something like that. And
that's pretty scary how that could happen to somebody just normally smart, really super smart, good family guy, and then all of a sudden he's just going to go bonkers.
That's how it happens.
It's almost like Alzheimer's. It's like, where did that come from, and where's the logic in it?
But that's even more scary. I mean, there's, you know, the treatments and stuff. I mean, that's even more scary, and I think that really threw Donna for a loop when she heard that.
Maybe they'll even call it Alzheimer's.
But then she tells Gordon, she goes back in the room and she tells Gordon that the doctor thinks it's psychological, and he says he knows. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's another, I mean, we got a prelude of this, Donna being the mother, even to Gordon, like the time she sang the girls to sleep and Gordon was falling asleep too.
Yeah.
Like Donna was the mother, and Donna's like a mother again here. Like, I don't think we're going to be able to go home tonight, honey. You know, it's like a motherly.
But yeah. I'm really wondering if we're not going to find out if Gordon wasn't maybe diagnosed at some point before. I don't know. And because he acts like he knows he has a psychological issue. And he didn't. I mean, we've not heard that before.
Yeah, and he's done some really stupid things, like unexpectedly with Jules in that episode. That didn't fit any part of Gordon's character.
Exactly.
He seems like a really good husband and a loving partner and a good father. And here he is screwing around on a trip with another.
On a whim. Just on a whim, because he gets high. I mean, it was crazy.
Well, he was under the pressure of the illness, and nobody listened to him. And
yeah, but he's been under pressure forever. He was under pressure with Symphonics, and he's under pressure at his company. And he's always under pressure. But now he's acting out. But I mean, you know, digging the hole and acting out of character. And you know, I don't know. I'm really worried about Gordon. So that is why I give leeway to the whole 10 minutes of this episode in the garage, because I think they were really trying to lead us up to something with Gordon on that. So
how does it end, Michelle?
Well, Joe and Sarah are fighting. She wants to know why he did what he did. She calls him something that happens to people when they deserve better. She calls him an accident. Is that the most cruel thing you've ever heard anybody called? I mean, I've heard people called, like, terrible names, but to be called an accident, that's horrible. And he says that he deserves better, that he's the one that deserves better, and he deserves her. And Sarah wishes he could see his face when he says Cameron's name, and she asks him to say Cameron's name, and then she walks out on him.
Yeah, it's quite a bit different than you're the master of the universe.
It is quite a bit different. All this has went down and just, you know, I mean, they haven't even moved yet. So within a couple weeks, at least, they're standing in the... I thought that scene was real compelling. They're standing in an empty room. There's nothing but a lamp plugged in to the wall, like you might have for light, you know, as a last measure before you move. And it was a pretty lonely kind of forlorn scene. I thought it was pretty good.
So what do you think is going to happen next in the series?
Well, one more scene is where we see Cameron's talking to people who bought the game, and they know Tom, and that he pushed for that meeting. And she didn't know that. He would not quit calling until they took that meeting.
Yeah, he knew the fun time people.
Yeah, yeah. And so she runs outside and finds Tom, and Tom's leaving. And he insinuates that he's leaving forever, that he's done.
Did we say at the time that when Cameron was making all those calls to the cartridge publishers, the game publishers, that the only reason we're here is this is the one company that returned my call out of like 100 people?
Yeah, we didn't say that, but yeah, that's true.
So that was because of Tom.
Yep.
But you can't always, I mean, somebody can do something super nice for you, and you don't have to love them back just because they did that. You know, that happens all the time in life, that somebody's really nice to you and offers you something as a really cool gift, and if you don't love them, you don't love them. And I think that's Cameron and Tom. I don't think she's going to go back to Tom just because he did this really nice thing.
No, and I don't think he'd want her to, but because, I mean, you know, he's the one leaving. She's not, you know, telling him to leave. But
right, but this happened with Joe, too. It's a good mechanism to make the absence make the heart grow fonder. Joe left her and got out of her way and made, you know, opened the door for her to flourish, and then she came back to Joe too. It's interesting. I mean, we may have one episode left in this whole series, and they may cancel the show. So it's interesting what they'll do. 210 is the last episode of season 2, and maybe if they don't renew it, the last episode of it all. And I think they have to kind of plan. They had a really kind of low viewership last year, and they weren't sure they were going to be renewed. They almost have to plan when they write this that they write it with semi-ending the series, I think.
Well, that is really frustrating. I don't understand why this show wouldn't have better...
It's too smart for people. You can't just... You got to figure all this stuff out. Game of Thrones is that way too. It's very intelligent, but Game of Thrones has a lot of action, and essentially stupid people can like Game of Thrones because there's dragons and swords and sex. You know, this is a very heady intellectual show, and it doesn't have that stuff, and it doesn't have gunfights and car chases. It's pretty psychological.
Yeah, I'm going to be really disappointed if this show is canceled.
So what do you think? So Heaven is a Place. It's 210. What do you think is going to happen?
I think I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say I think Joe and Cameron end up forging some kind of something together.
Yeah, they have to make Joe and Cameron hopeful. Like, we can hope that they get together. They can't put them together. That's too corny, and it would destroy any potential future if they do get a season 3 or 4 and beyond.
Yeah, but Joe or Cameron, either one, are not going to be one to hold back. I mean, good grief, she was sleeping with the guy, what, like 45 minutes after she met him? You know, and he even made some rude comment about it. So if they're together, meaning like physically together, I don't think that would necessarily mean a relationship together, but I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't automatically dismiss them just because they had a physical relationship.
So what in history, where are we in history? What in history could be looming here? It's like 2000, and it's 2000. It's like 1985 or 6, however far they jump for Heaven is a Place. Probably something in California. She wanted to go to California. He might be going to California. What happened in that time frame? I think that's what we'll see in Heaven is a Place. Something next in real life that happened that might be California based.
Oh, cool.
Maybe AOL-ish or...
Yeah. Yeah, and that Heaven is a Place. You know, we're talking about places online and communities online. So, I don't know.
So, that's it. So, we'll see next week. I'm glad we're caught up, Michelle from Tennessee, on West Coast Project for Halt and Catch Fire. And True Detective, what else are we doing? We're not doing anything right away, but I saw some Fargo that looks really cool. I saw some previews of Fargo. And The Affair looks interesting.
Yeah.
What else? Louis on vacation till probably winter. But anyway, we do other podcasts at West Coast Project. Look us up. find me at Scathing Tweets. And Michelle, where do people find you?
At Michelle from TN.
All right, so we got anything else? Oh, we should say we're going to do season one recaps. We've done one and two. While Michelle was on vacation, we published one and two. But we'll do the rest. We'll do the other eight from season one.
Yeah.
Season one was really good, and it got slow in the middle and really good at the end.
I started watching season one, and I've said this before, but I started watching season one. I really liked it the first few episodes, and then I really lost interest in it. So I had went back and rewatched it. And after having watched season two, I encourage anybody who's really into the show right now to go back and watch season one, because everything is going to just crystallize for you when you do that.
So we'll probably do those after next week, after 210 airs.
Okay.
So Michelle, I'll put you on the spot too. Orange is the New Black. Did you do any recordings with your daughter while you were on vacation?
There was just no way. There was no way. I cannot express the frustration in technology. I felt like I was back in 1985.
So if there are going to be more Orange Is the New Black, it's probably going to be you and your daughters. So if you want to do some, that's our podcast for Orange Is the New Black. I'm just not that into it. So, and we're behind now.
Does Jamie like it? I could do it with Jamie.
Yeah, you could do it with Jamie. You could do it with anyone but me. Do it with Mike.
I don't know if he'll do Orange Is the New Black. I don't know that that's his thing either.
We'll do it with your daughters. Now you have technology at your fingertips again. All right, Michelle, heaven is a place. I'll see you there next week.
See you there, Mike.